present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a programme description from the Radio 4 website.
Saturday drama, The Million Pound Banknote. A man is given £1 million and must try to survive a month without spending a penny.
And our thanks to Elizabeth Murphitt for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Hugo Rifkin and Andrew Maxwell. And opposite them on my left, Susan Kalman and Jeremy Hardy. Hugo, what's going to be in a power struggle for the next 17 years?
Bills, Sandy.
Yes.
The electricity companies have said that our bills are going to go up by more than inflation for the next 17 years. But the crucial thing here is it's not their fault. The problem is it's the fault of the government, because the government hasn't built enough power stations. Because when they took over these privatised industries, they thought their job was just to sell the electricity. They didn't realise they were going to be called upon to make it as well. So it's a completely understandable kind of sort of misapprehension they've been under. I mean, it won't make any difference because they just push up our bills as much as they want to anyway. Because you get a bill and you owe them 50 quid and you see your account is £700 in credit. Because they just take as much as they want on the basis that you might use it. Which I think we should maybe start doing, you know, with other payments, like with salaries, for example. You just take as much as you want from your employer on the basis that you might be about to get a pay rise. And then if you don't, you can just be like, well, can I just hold on to it until I do? No? Isn't that reasonable?
I did like him. Was she called Angela Knight? She's the head of Energy UK. And she did say that the industry had an image problem. You think, what are they worrying about their image? We're being held to ransom. It's a bit like a captor turning their hostage and asking whether the balaclava makes their face look fat. I mean, it's just...
I like that the government thinks that the solution is jumpers. I'm sorry, it doesn't matter how many jumpers you put on a tin of soup, you're never going to be able to heat it up. You can dress your fish fingers as warmly as you like.
Do they have high bills in Scotland?
I don't know. I just always, when the man comes to read my meter, because they send me emails saying, send us your meter reading, but I refuse to do that because I want to make them work for their money. And I always answer the door in my good pyjamas.
Is that the ones with the penguins?
No, they're better than that.
Dennis, you think I'm kidding? I haven't seen it.
Yes. That was at one of our pyjama parties the News Quiz has occasionally. I grew up watching Dynasty, and Joan Collins always had a silky pair of pyjamas that she wore, like, for visitors. And I've got a pair of... A pair of silky pyjamas and a pair of mules. So when the meter man comes, I answer the door like that. Hiya. It's just over there. And then the cats are all sitting there and he runs. So I've really not paid a bill in a long time, Sandy. That's...
I had kind of an idea for constantly renewable source of energy. We could hook Jeremy up to a generator and then ask him what he thinks of the Conservative Party between 1979 and 1990. Jim.
My favourite foreign energy company, if you've got one, is the Italian version of PowerGen. Because for a while they had their website and it was PowerGen Italia, but it spelt out Power Genitalia. But I think they changed it.
I did like him. Alan Young from Scottish and Southern Energy said, this country has reliable supplies of energy. When people have gone to switch the lights on, they have come on. So thanks for clearing that up for us, Alan.
Why does the Green Levies bit, why do they get to take that off the customers? That's the point. Shouldn't that come out of their profits? Isn't that... I mean, maybe I'm being fantastically naive.
You're in danger of making a good political point.
Why is planning ahead a tax in the first place?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
because that's presumed that's what a Green Levy is.
It's so lagging old people's lofts, basically. That's what they do with it. They take all that money and they stuff it in old people's attics. Not realising that old people's attics are actually full of money anyway, because old people don't believe in banks.
I got my attic lagged.
Did you?
Yeah.
It's not many women say that. A report by the National Audit Office. Oh, can you imagine growing up and working for them? How just how depressing. What do you want to do? Never in your life met a child. So what do you want to do when you grow up? I want to work for the National Audit Office. It's my dream, and unless it happens, I'm going to kill myself.
I'm going to make it happen. I'm going to the big city. I'm going to be a comptroller. I'm going to keep those big guys in check.
Just so much better as a reality show than X Factor, wouldn't it be?
I've always dreamed of, like, you know, going through date ales and stuff. They said I couldn't make it. They said I was too plain.
I'm doing it for me nan.
A report by the National Audit Office claims that energy and water bills are set to rise faster than inflation and wages for the next 17 years. In low-income households, energy bills account for up to 15% of domestic spending in 2011, which, to put it in real terms, is roughly the same amount high-income households spend on halloumi or multicoloured satchels.
Or those damn trundles in airports. Oh. Oh, God, what did I buy one of those for? You just end up carrying them.
Yeah, I know.
Your kid doesn't actually want to sit on a trundly bit of plastic.
No.
No matter how pink.
Yeah.
I've told him, sit on it. You end up carrying it, and it's too awkward. You're just carrying a thing, a pink thing with an elephant's face in it.
Is your child that ugly?
Really colourful. Really characterful.
Daddy, I'm not an animal. I'm not a trundle. I'm not a trundle. I am a human being.
What is wrong with this programme? I'm trying to talk about energy. It's very serious.
It's a very serious issue.
Yes.
It is with our demographic. A harsh frost goes through Radio 4 listeners like a knife through butter.
2 points to Hugo. Jeremy, who's putting his faith in an open-door admissions policy?
The new bloke who replaced the Welsh hippie that we liked, the Justin Welby, the new Archbishop of Canterbury, has criticised Church of England schools for having a selection policy based on Christianity, I suppose, because traditionally anyone could get into a Church of England school. But what he's saying is that to make it easier for people to get into Church of England schools, what he should say is they should all be nationalised. Because it's just not fair, because kids are small and stupid and they'll believe anything. Fair enough, you tell them that religion exists and some grown-ups believe in Allah and some believe in Jehovah and some believe in God. But you can't just tell children stuff's true that might not be when they're that. I mean, they're below the age of criminal responsibility. If you can't be done for murder because you're too young, how are you supposed to master things like transubstantiation?
You can't. But basically, you get am I right that some churches are giving points to people who participate in the church in order to help get their child into school?
Yeah.
So if you do the flower arranging, or you read in the service, or you just wear Laura Ashley or something, I mean, there's a sort of...
I mean, parents trying to get their kids into school do anything, you know. I mean, we were on the verge of pretending to be sort of Ukrainian Orthodox or Jains or something, you know, just for a decent school. But I was writing about this today, about faith schools, and... I was sort of staggered because you read particularly a lot about Muslim faith schools, and people are frightened about Muslim faith schools and what are they learning, and in the heart of communities, not integrating and all this kind of stuff. And do you know how many Muslim faith schools there are in Britain? At a guess, people would sort of probably say, well, 100, a couple hundred. There's 11. 11 in Britain. And it, you know, and a sort of front page of the Daily Mail, so 8 times a year on 11. The big problem with faith schools is that they're really good, is the thing. And you can object to them all kinds of levels, but they're really good. They, you know, they get really good results.
Mm. I'm coming at this from the perspective of not quite understanding the Church of England school, the faith school system, if that's okay. But I went onto their website today because I just the HMRC had me on hold. So I was on it, and it says about homosexuality, which is a particular hobby of mine.
It takes up a lot of time for a hobby.
They teach about the practice of homosexuality, which I enjoy because it's always something to aspire to, is not falls short of the ideal expression of sexual love. So it falls short of the ideal expression of sexual love, which I enjoy because we all know what the ideal expression of sexual love is.
Why are you gesturing at me there?
Yeah, well, I think you probably do what I do, and I think the ideal expression
I don't think I do.
I think we probably do, but that's another conversation. It's bodybuilding poses, just wearing your socks.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You ever done? You know, you see bodybuilders. You've done it, Jeremy. We've done it together. And you do little bodybuilding poses, just wearing your socks.
What's she talking about now?
Well, how is this connected to the Church of England?
Because they teach something that's wrong, which is that homosexuality isn't the ideal expression of love. And I think if you bring something like that from faith in... I'm going to get killed for this, but never mind. I think anything that's faith-based in that regard for impressionable young minds to come out of a situation where they're not allowed to be taught about all kinds of love. Love's very different for a lot of different people, Andrew and Hugo. Jeremy and I have a love that people don't understand. But we understand it. We never touch, but we always climax.
It's getting awfully late.
Said the Archbishop to the actress.
I'm so sorry, Jeremy. I just wanted to say climax. I just loved you for so long.
Religious education, though, like a lot of things about religion, can be really confusing. I was recently, I was asked to be a godparent in a kind of proper sort of churchy, you know, type of situation, which I was very flattered to be, particularly as I'm Jewish. But nonetheless, and as part of the ceremony, I was, you know, very touched to be a godparent, and I intend to be a good one. One of the things I had to do was renounce Satan, which is really confusing, because you think, I mean, I don't mind renouncing Satan, but you think, if I was a Satanist... Surely Satan wouldn't mind if I just lied. I mean, if anyone's not going to mind you lying, then it's the Prince of Lies.
Do you know, Voltaire on his deathbed was recommended by a priest to renounce Satan, and he said, "This is no time to make new enemies."
Can you renounce Santa?
Yes. The Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, has said he supports church schools that are moving away from strictly faith-based admissions criteria. Some schools have been criticised for prioritising children whose parents would help the church by arranging flowers, reading lessons, or, for the more committed mother, spending 40 days in the desert telling the devil to sod off. Parents have to jump through all sorts of hoops to get into a church school because God takes PE very seriously. Scores are Hugo and Andrew have got 8 points, but so too have Susan and Jeremy. Susan, where is reorganising healthcare becoming an emergency?
England. Because, I don't know, there was an odd murmur in the crowd there when I said England. I'm not specifically getting at you, but... So... Sir Bruce Keogh, manager of NHS England, has announced a kind of a reorganisation, and there's lots of different proposals. One of the major ones is that they're going to change accident and emergency. So you're going to have two different levels of accident and emergency. You can have a major emergency centre where you go if you've got a major emergency. And then you've got an accident emergency where you've got if you've just got an emergency. So major emergency and emergency. Now, the definition of major emergency and emergency is very much dependent on what you consider a major emergency is. Personally, a paper cut is quite traumatic for me. It's like, it's not the same as a Tesco and a Tesco Metro.
Right.
You go to a Tesco, you can get an apple and a jogging suit. A Tesco Metro, only the apple.
Mm.
But how do you know often before you get there if you need a jogging suit?
I don't know why you're not in charge.
The NHS spends $2 billion a year on dealing with drunken idiots in accident emergencies. And that's what I believe there should be a three-tier system.
Mm.
Tier number one, heart disease and strokes. Tier number two, fall off a ladder. Tier number three, if you're drunk, you open the door and you fall straight into a ball pond. That's it. You're just drunk. It's surrounded by colourful balls until you fall asleep.
But I like right? This three-tier thing. Surely you could have emergency, major emergency. Yeah. Could you not also have comic injuries? You know, the ones that involve removing household appliances from unusual places. And then we could charge money, but there could be an audience for people to come and have a laugh. We can have the drunks lined up laughing at people who put a Hoover in a strange place.
So the people in A&E, they're so... You do sort of think, oh, God, who are these hapless, clumsy night people? Where do they go in the day? And given that they can't negotiate a kitchen without getting all the implements stuck in them in various... How do they even find their way to the hospital?
To make decisions. In February last year, this was not an alcohol-induced injury, before anyone suggested anything. My wife fell down a pothole. Now, it was really funny in the beginning. And I was filming it, and then I thought, oh, no, she's actually unconscious. The other way, you have a sudden realisation this isn't a hilarious YouTube moment and she'd actually genuinely broken her ankle. And I was dragging her under the arms to the car and I thought someone might have stopped me because I was dragging an unconscious woman through the streets of Glasgow.
Is that how you met originally?
Dragging her to the car, she's unconscious, I'm now panicking a little bit. So I was dragging her to the car and I thought, someone's going to stop me. And eventually a man did stop me and I thought, you know, someone's bothered. I'm dragging an unconscious woman. I was at the car and the guy went, you can't open your car with that in your hands. Do you want me to hold her for you? And I thought, oh, that's, you know, gentleman spirits not dead in Glasgow at all. But they were lovely accident emergency. But the point is, I was so panicked at that point, mainly because we'd just been to the supermarket and the frozen shopping was defrosting.
They're dangerous potholes for short people because my partner and I, we were in a very remote part of Ghana and it was very late at night. We were walking along, there was absolutely no light at all, but we knew the way back to where we were staying. And she was chatting to me, and she turned around, and I had completely disappeared. And I fell into a 5 foot deep pothole, and I am exactly 5 foot tall. I was absolutely fine. I just fell straight standing up in this pothole. She could not get me out for laughing. Simply, it was...
So did that become a potholing weekend then?
Yes, awesome.
I think people don't know what the emergency numbers are for, because, you know, the police keep publishing all the people phone up and say things like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life, and, you know, what's the definition of guilt? People doing jury service ringing up saying, which one's the one when they did it? Is it guilty or not guilty? That kind of thing. I think you should ring 999 and say, what's the most trivial inquiry you've ever had? I fell off a ladder, because when you're 50, you fall off a ladder. It's like a rites of passage. You qualify for
I remember, you were a mess.
I was a mess. Yeah. I fell off this ladder. I think, did I tell this story? I was here, wasn't I? That's right, I fell off a ladder and I had a huge bruise, which I showed to...
My friend, the doctor, was here. You showed it chest.
And I showed it to Talusha Gilani, one of the producers in Lie 10, and she said very, very loudly, oh, my God, Jeremy, it's so big. And people looked round to see me buttoning up the top of my shirt, thinking, well, if he has to undo his shirt, it is pretty... Impressive.
Well, I think the problem is that we don't kiss things better enough.
Yeah. That's true.
On the way into the A&E, if there was just somebody that looked a little bit like your mum when you were 10, I could just kiss you. You know.
Oh. Sometimes this show is a bit like therapy, isn't it? Sir Bruce Keogh, the head of NHS England, has outlined plans for a two-tier A&E system with major emergency centres for strokes and heart attacks and ordinary emergency centres for less serious conditions. The reorganisation would replace the current two-tier system of waiting and waiting on a trolley. It's hoped the changes will help alleviate congestion caused when someone waiting for a finger plaster gets so angry they also have a heart attack. 2 points to La Calman. Andrew, my darling boy, listen to this. I'm moving all up now. Getting out of the
darkness. Is the answer Bobby Gillespie?
Yes, 2 points.
Thank you.
I have no bloody idea. Whose forecast shows things might be brightening up?
It's the Bank of England.
Yes.
Says everything's good.
Yeah.
But the thing's never, it's economics. They give it one hand, they take with the other. Apparently, unemployment has gone down. That sounds like a good thing. Only the thing is, if the unemployment goes down, then the interest rates will go up, which is good for savers, but bad for people with mortgages. So it's
whichever way you look at
it. It's a tickle in the tummy and a poke in the eye. Mm. Nothing's ever good for everyone in economics.
Mark Carney of the Bank of England,
yes.
He was talking about it and he said, from now on, you don't have to be an optimist to see that the glass is half full, which I just keep turning around in my head. I just cannot figure out what that means. You don't have to be an optimist to see that it's... I thought maybe he said optometrist to see that, which would be easier. I don't know, it's completely nuts, I can't figure it out.
I find him difficult to take seriously. Does he not look like one of those generic American presidents from a Hollywood disaster movie, and you just know he's going to get killed 5 minutes after he says everything's just fine?
But George Osborne, at a conference, he said that he's going to run a surplus, didn't he? And the reason he's going to run a surplus is so that he can bail the market out again next time it screws up, which he said it will do.
Oh.
So he's more or less admitted that capitalism will again fail and we will have to make up the shortfall.
It does fail, but when it's good, it's great. I mean, there's always the boom years are fantastic. As somebody from an island that's only coming out of the bust, like, we've had our first good numbers today as well, like, we're already rubbing our hands. In 5 years' time, we're all buying yachts again. We're buying yachts and we're putting them in the back of our helicopters and taking them to the sea.
Well, David Cameron said that austerity is here to stay.
But it was a banquet, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's austerity is here to stay from my throne.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was saying to my pet unicorn only the other day.
It is nice, though, when you get a falcon to pick stuff out of your teeth. Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's weird at first, but then you get into it. You just lay back and just let them get busy.
Britain's economic growth will accelerate to 2.8% next year, according to the Bank of England. Experts put the rise down to better-than-expected retail figures over the last quarter. Well, nobody tell the John Lewis bear. He's smug enough as it is. 2 points to Andrew. Jeremy, who has a major problem with minor mobility?
Sir John Major.
Yeah.
He's a self-made man, got himself in kit form originally and didn't read the instructions very well. And Major spoke out saying that there were too many privately educated people. And the government does often look like a country house weekend. I mean, it's like an episode of Poirot, except none of the buggers has the decency to get poisoned. But Labour's doing soul searching about this as well, because they've got a very posh public school cabinet as well. I mean, Ed Balls went to public school, and I think Tristram Hunt certainly sounds like he went to public school. Because people think politicians are as they are because they just don't know. They know exactly what goes on in the world. They just don't care is the problem. What would happen if you got a load of poor people to confront the elite and say, do you know, it's terrible having no money. All the elite would say is, yes, we rather thought it might be. That's why we don't share our riches. Now run along, you're becoming tiresome.
Is John Major from a circus family?
He was brought up in Brixton. He was brought up in Brixton from a circus family. Still famous in Brixton for being the only person from the area to ever vote Conservative.
As Linda Smith said, not many people born into the circus run off to become an accountant.
But I mean, I think to give the upper classes their credit, they do try and do the bit of downward mobility. They do send their children away on a gap year somewhere in the third world to get lost. And then a lot of them don't come back, but that's what they say, you know. You know, if your children go away and they don't come back, they were never truly yours.
You're saying that children are essentially like pigeons, Andrew.
I'm saying they're just like pigeons. If one of them gets lost, you have to send up another one to bring it back.
And most Saturday nights, you can see them defecating on a statue. Yes.
Exactly.
Sir John Major has criticised the lack of social mobility in the UK, arguing that the corridors of power are dominated by the privately educated and the wealthy middle classes. Major called on Cameron to do more to give the lower classes a leg up. The Prime Minister defended himself by suggesting Aspiration Nation is at the heart of his policies and also the chorus of his failed venture into the world of reggae. Cameron went on to help two disadvantaged youths by showing them a secret handshake which gets them half-price pheasant delivery. At the end of round one, the scores are Hugo and Andrew have got 4 points, but so too have Susan and Jeremy. We start round two with signs spotted at the Titanic Museum in Belfast.
The Titanic artifact exhibition is currently closed due to water damage.
Thanks to Andrew Stewart for sending us that. Hugo, who acted like a right Charlie on his birthday?
Prince Charles.
Yes.
Prince Charles is now 65.
He is.
He's at the age of retirement, pretty much. And we were talking before about, you know, posh kids sort of going on a gap year. What Prince Charles has done is he basically went to school, and then he went briefly to university, and then he went on a gap year for the next 43 years. And that's still going strong. And you feel a bit sorry for him, because he's obviously terribly bored and trying to find things to do. And so he embarks on all these... he's not allowed to get really involved in politics. Mm. So he embarks on all these kind of madcap things. Sometimes they turn out very well. The Prince's Trust, great organisation. The Biscuits, they're very good. So sometimes it's fine. Sometimes it gets a bit weird. Nanotechnology, architecture, all that kind of stuff. And I think this week, as befitting his status as a man of the people, he's been guest editing Country Life.
Which I haven't read, but I'm sure is wonderful. But he's very upset that that farmers don't get more money, and he's upset that supermarkets basically rule the countryside these days because they, you know, they don't pay farmers much, and they take all the money, and they basically rule the countryside. And he feels that maybe somebody else ought to rule the countryside, perhaps on a hereditary basis.
he still owns a lot of the country.
Oh, yes.
He owns the whole of Cornwall, all of it. It's a little known fact that if you don't make a will in Cornwall, when you die, everything you own goes to him.
Yeah, tax-free, I think, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, he says that his duchy then, you know, hands it out to charities, but, you know, maybe their own children. You know, it's the same with Dublin. He used to own a load of the city centre of Dublin that was only handed over with the peace process 15 years ago.
Well, what I liked about this, Camilla said, Charles enjoyed celebrating his birthday, adding that he liked people giving him cake and a bit of a sing-song. What an inspirational insight into the lives of the royals.
He does, in fairness, he always goes down. When they have terrible floods in Cornwall or something, he always turns up. Then you think, oh, God, that's all you need. Your house has been destroyed. And then the landlord arrives.
I think, though, that he should stop waiting around to become king, and he should do something useful. Now, in my local supermarket, they employ older people to greet you at the door. Now, I think he should start doing something, because if you walked into your local supermarket and Prince Charles was there just going,
this is a bog off on toilet rolls.
Sorry, I had to look more closely because it was so like John Major that I...
yes, he should, you know, get out there. Greet people. Go to Lidl's. Sell them a canoe.
Apparently, according to Camilla, he's the hardest working royal. My husband's not one for chilling, said Camilla.
The hardest working royal. I mean, come on.
Yeah, you know. That's kind of a tallest dwarf competition.
Yeah.
All I'm saying
is... the fastest running octogenarian. I mean, it's...
If Camilla likes her husband's chilled, she should have married Walt Disney. It's a cryogenic joke.
Duke of Edinburgh's fairly chilling at times, isn't he?
He's a god, you know.
Who?
The Duke of Edinburgh.
He's a god.
In the South Pacific somewhere?
Yeah, there's an island out there that, like, worship him and is a god.
Hmm? I bet Sandy's a god somewhere. You could see that, couldn't you?
Thank you, Dan.
Yes, in many lesbian clubs across the country. There's a poster of Sandy and some candles underneath almost every lesbian bar. In Europe, I would suggest, and when you arrive in the bar, you have to anoint yourself with some sacred water and say the secret words number 73, and then you're like... It's an initiation thing. Heterosexual men will never know the experience of being, as we call it, toxvict.
We can imagine it, though.
Moving along... Prince Charles celebrated his 65th birthday on Thursday during his tour of India. Charles commemorated his birthday by guest editing Country Life magazine, where he aired his views on everything from art to books to GM crops. It's the first time Charles has edited a magazine and the first time Country Life has been 4,000 pages long. During their tour of India, Camilla ended up giving a rare impromptu interview to journalists because at the time Charles was busy talking to his garland of flowers. He loves collecting, so for his birthday, Camilla bought him china. Well, he's got Cornwall. May as well have the Orient. Can I just say I offer Charles my sincerest homeopathic birthday wishes? There's possibly some goodwill in there somewhere, but it's certainly not apparent. Andrew, whose healthcare reforms might be yanked?
This is Obamacare in America. Mm. See, the right wing in America didn't want Obamacare to happen because they don't believe the government is any good at things. And then Obama's government shot back by being terrible at it. The website didn't work. When people went to register with Obamacare, it didn't work.
Yeah, only 27,000 people managed to register.
Yeah. And then he also promised that if you already had healthcare, you could keep that. And he was reneged on that. And then I think 6.5 million Americans are having their private healthcare taken off them. And all the while, he's on the golf course. He's played more golf than any other American president.
Is that right?
He's played 150 rounds of golf since he's been president. He's played three times as much golf as Bush.
Wow.
Yeah, Bush stopped because he knew it looked bad.
Obamacare was the big thing that Mitt Romney fought in the election. That was where it kind of came down to, wasn't it? It was healthcare.
Well, see, the big problem with it, I mean, it is essentially quite a bad idea, is the problem. Like, you need healthcare if you're sick. And so all the people who are signing up for it are sick. And all the people who need to pay for the people being not sick are people who are not sick, who are not signing up for it. It's a sort of flaw in insurance, and it's probably doomed, and it's terrible.
Well, it's all right for Mitt Romney. He doesn't need healthcare. He breaks down, one of his assistants just resets him with a paperclip.
It's Clinton, though, that's really been going for Obama about it, because Clinton has said that he has to sort out, because it's a big issue, obviously, between the Democrats and the Republicans. And Clinton's been speaking up a lot more, and there's a discussion about whether or not he's doing it because he's the elder statesman of the Democratic Party, or, as I believe, he's dead and Hillary Clinton's wearing his skin.
I think he's resurfaced because the card shops failed, didn't they? He put all his hopes into that and thought, well, I've only got two terms as president, but people always need cards, don't they?
It's weird, isn't it? You know? And then Moonpig came along.
Yeah.
Destroyed his dream. Now he's back in politics. And it's got an incredible catchphrase. Moonpig.com. How good is that? What's Clinton's?
Clinton cards. We only have four basic cards, extra card, woman's card, man's card. All cards are equal.
Sorry, but is Clinton cards being run by Putin now?
What I'm saying, it's this hideous communist card system. Four basic gestures. I am glad you're still alive, Igor. I also am glad you have survived the snow, Vladimir.
But the benefit of something like that online card retailer that you can personalise the cards is if you were lonely, as I was for a while when I was single, I don't know why, you used to have to text your own landline, whereas now you can just send yourself a card and pretend it's from someone else.
But when you open it, you do secretly know you're really the saddest person on the planet.
Yes, but then you put it on the mantelpiece and you think, oh, someone likes me.
We have card for you, miserable card. Unhappy woman, card number 3.
But genuinely, what's going on in the American thing is it's Clinton already looking ahead to the election cycle in 2 years' time.
Can I just say that about him? Because I met him once, right? I had about 5 minutes private conversation with him. And I, given all the things that I hope you know about me, I suddenly could see Monica's viewpoint. I just...
What, well, did he get it
you're
out?
You're about the same point.
Certainly I wouldn't have had to kneel. But no, he... Obama's done what we all thought was impossible, created a more confusing version of the NHS. The implementation of Barack Obama's healthcare plan, the Affordable Care Act, has led to some of the president's lowest approval ratings. Like Britain, America has a two-tier A&E system. You either have health insurance and you're treated as an emergency, or you don't and you're asked to sew your own arm back on. Hugo, whose thieving means they'll be doing organic porridge?
Give me a clue.
And I'll go to the other side if they know.
Yes, it's the increase in shoplifting.
No, 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 what it is. No, she's wrong. What it is, it's the increase in shoplifting. among, basically, they've decided middle-class goods are getting shoplifted a lot. Middle-class people are shoplifting more. Things like Parmesan and Brie and Gammon Shanks or something. but it's this idea that because of certain goods are getting stolen, this must be a kind of middle-class thieving epidemic. Because, obviously, poor people wouldn't eat this stuff, you know. So it's a slightly sort of patronising, thieving type story.
It just shows that shoplifters are developing a more sophisticated palate, which I think is to be encouraged, surely.
Here's a genuine fact. I used to work in a high street electrical superstore, and we were taught the tricks of the shoplifters because we were meant to spot them. And the best way of shoplifting, and this is true, is to foil line your pants and put the goods inside your underwear, because it stopped the security type situation, and you could easily secrete goods.
When you say
in your
easily,
pants.
You were selling electrical goods.
Yes.
So, sort of fridges.
Yes.
I'm trying to follow the logic. logic of this story.
I'm not suggesting one could secrete a washing machine in one's undercrackers.
No.
But one could, for example, place batteries are a very popular item.
So are you taught to say, excuse me, Sarah, those hair straighteners, or are you just pleased to see me?
I think cheese is one of the biggest shoplifted things, and I would not want to put cheese in my pants. It was a simple point.
The razor blades, mascara and lipstick is on the thief's wish list.
Wasn't there a type of honey that they were stealing a lot in?
Manuka honey is lovely to steal.
According to some retailers, they've had to start putting security seals on jars of Manuka honey, and this has only partially worked, as security seals are easily distracted by mackerel. So it's...
They need those US Navy SEALs.
They're
really tough, those ones.
Sort them out. I tell you what, if Waitrose discover you've been shoplifting from them, they send Delia around your place with a baseball bat. I'm telling you, it's not so. This week, a study revealed that the middle classes are turning to shoplifting, with theft of gourmet foods such as cheese, meat and fresh coffee going up considerably in the last year. The punishments for shoplifting these items range from prison time to community service, with a maximum sentence of being forced to shop at Aldi for 5 years. Among some of the weirder thefts reported, one couple was accused of stealing jars of mint jelly. Reports suggest they're now on the lam. Jeremy, listen to this. Running around, robbing banks, so whacked up with screwy snacks. Jeremy, which civic leader has denied he's about to crack?
Yeah, what's his name? Ford? Rob Ford?
Rob Ford.
Mayor of Toronto. He said he won't be stepping aside. I've seen the man. He'd have to do more than step aside to make room for somebody else. He'd have to leave the city to make way for another mayor. People quite like him because
he's much to be admired. He is a 30-stone crackhead.
Yeah.
How is that possible? Where in your day after day of staying up smoking a cocaine-based drug are you having time to eat all these cheeseburgers?
His defence, he said, yes, I did smoke crack, but to be fair, I was very drunk.
So you've got to admire his front, because he stood in front of the council and said, yeah, I smoke it, and I bought it. So he said, yeah, I smoke it, and I buy it. And he said, I'm not going to leave, because I think I'm a positive role model for children. Now, you've got to admire somebody like that. But he just goes, no, I'm doing it. I like him. I want him to be mayor of London.
Look, what have we got here? We're going to blonde half-wit.
Yeah? Do you think if Boris Johnson smoked crack, he'd behave more erratically or less?
I think it's very hard to tell.
Rob Ford, the crack-smoking mayor of Toronto, is still refusing to resign despite admitting he has bought illegal drugs, been drunk in public, threatened to kill a man on video, and a new accusation of snorting cocaine with a prostitute. Still, at least he didn't promise not to raise tuition fees. Trite Ford said, am I an alcoholic? No, but I did smoke crack, probably during one of my many drunken stupors. He went on to manage to answer questions 1 to 8 of the AA's Are You an Alcoholic questionnaire in a single sentence. Some Canadians are worried he's damaging the global reputation of Toronto as the world's dullest city. Andrew, which thinking man is now an inking man?
Oh, no, this is David Dimbleby. Got a giant scorpion tattooed on his shoulder. And the weird thing about it is, they say that Jonathan could feel it. How weird is that? They're not even twins. It doesn't make any sense. But the bit of it was that he got a scorpion tattooed because apparently he's a Scorpio.
He chose the scorpion because it's his star sign.
Right. But it didn't have enough legs on it.
No, it had 6 instead of 8.
Yeah, it said people at arachnid files. Absolutely beeswax on the internet. Mm. They're gone, there aren't enough, there's simply not enough legs on your scorpion. You've put a langoustine on your shoulder. What have you done there? That's not a star sign, it's a delicious, delicious starter in a seafood restaurant.
I would have had a tattoo of my star sign done, but crabs is not a good message to give out.
You know, the thing was, when I saw that, first of all, David Dimbleby has a surprisingly blonde, hairy back. Did anyone see the close-ups of it? It was quite soothing. And I found myself thinking, next time I watch Question Time, I'm just going to be imagining gently playing with the hair on David Dimbleby's back. Because it was like an albino kitten. And I thought, I can never watch him interview anyone again, because all I'm going to be thinking is, I want to run my fingers through your back here, David Dimbleby.
You see, the thing is about having any tattoo, I would worry about as I got older or fatter what would happen. There was a famous woman called Arturia Gibbons, and she was the most famous tattooed lady. And she had the Last Supper tattooed across her back, and apparently she put on so much weight towards the end that Jesus began to look really leery. during the filming of his programme, Britain and the Sea, David Dimbleby had his first tattoo, a scorpion/prawn, on his shoulder. On Newsnight, Jeremy Paxman mocked Dimbleby's decision to have a tattoo at the age of 75 by writing "Good Night" on his knuckles. Dimbleby responded in turn by sticking grey bits of fuzzy felt to his chin and shamelessly fawning over Russell Brand. 2 points to Andrew. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings. The teams have brought along Mr. Rifkind.
This is from the BBC News website, and it's sent in by Ben Lodge. It says, casting directors are searching Dorset for bearded men to appear as extras in a BBC adaptation of a Thomas Hardy novel. Men who can shear sheep and women with long natural hair are also in demand for the production.
Mr. Maxwell.
This is from somebody called Lawrence Gordon. Father of 30, who use sperm donor website to get women into bed, loses paternity battle. The judge said Mr. F's prolific sexual activity amounted to a brazen flouting of the rules of the website, which he said had no effective control over its members.
Ms. Kelman.
Ian Kessel sent this in from the Cornish Guardian. It's about a couple that have been together for 60 years. Their first date was at the Palace Cinema in Truro, where Leonora recalls reaching into Arthur's pocket for a sweet and being embarrassed when she pulled out a sticky one.
Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Ms. P. Taylor, and it's from the Dover Express. Dover dignitaries travelled by horse when they visited the Alcombe Valley Community Project. MP Charlie Elphick and Dover West County Councillor Geoffrey Limer attended its first open day. The Tory MP said, "This is a great project that does so much to help people with disabilities. Councillor Limer and I had enormous fun being ridden about the place."
Before we leave you, here is a cutting from a primary school's parent information sheet sent to us by Catherine Randall.
This term's design and technology topic, shelters, will be linked to our work in history. The children will learn how to design and construct an air raid shelter, which will then be tested.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Hugo Rifkind, Andrew Maxwell, Susan Cullman and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Carolyn Brown. The chair script was written by Lucy Clark, Jack Bernhardt and Roderick Crooks, with additional material by Rachel Wheely and James Bug. The producer was Sam Michel.